You may not have heard of a bilby, but believe me, these mini marsupials are extremely cute. But they're also an endangered species in Australia, alongside many of the country's other native fauna, largely owing to feral animals, like cats and foxes, that have been introduced from Europe. But now a major initiative called Project Eden, which is based in the François Perron National Park in Shark Bay, northwest Australia, has been set up to tackle the problem by returning a patch of the country to what it would have been like before rat and cat-bearing European settlers arrived on the scene.
I'm Brett Fitzgerald. I'm the District Manager for the Department of Environment and Conservation in Shark Bay District. The aims for Project Eden is to reconstruct the original native fauna on the Perron Peninsula within Shark Bay. So that's done through a combination of getting some information on what species were here originally, then managing the actual pressures that are on those species, the ones that are remaining, and artificial pressures that possibly pushed some of the others to extinction.
And what were they?
The main pressure that we've seen on not only Perron Peninsula as across Australia is the introduction of feral predators. The feral cat, which has been around for longer than foxes, but in synchronisation with that, species such as rabbits, which have provided a prey source and a food source for the introduced predators, which lets them build up to numbers. And then what it appears to have happened is we then have a crash of those introduced prey species, such as rabbits, and then the predators are at such large numbers they move across to what are possibly remnant and smaller populations of native animals and push them towards extinction.
So why have you chosen this site to try this experiment, to try and make this happen?
Yeah, across a lot of Australia where we've seen native animals survive, been on an island environment because we haven't had the feral predators introduced. The difficulty with working on islands is simply access. They're difficult places to work on. Perron Peninsula inherently was a mainland island. It's 100,000 hectares, so it's 1,000 square kilometres, but there's only a narrow neck about 3.2 kilometres wide which connects that large peninsula to the mainland. So by fencing that off, controlling feral animals inside the enclosed area, we can limit the potential for reinvasion and, I guess, get the best value for money for the eradication programs.
What have you done in terms of getting rid of those nuisance animals that us Europeans brought here a couple of hundred years ago?
Well, we've really controlled the large herbivores, so species such as feral goats and sheep. And Perron, before it was purchased for conservation, was an operating sheep station, and goats were not really used commercially in those early days, but they were present here as well. So that's a combination of mustering, trapping and eradicating those species. They're large, they tend to come to water in summer, so they're relatively easy to control. Then we've had red foxes, which are a common species in Europe, but introduced to Australia. They're a dog species. They tend to be relatively easy to control by a naturally occurring poison placed in a bait here. So the estimates were between 2,000 and 3,000 foxes on the Perron Peninsula before control commenced. We have the occasional one that might sneak around the fence, but we're in the order of single figures of foxes on the peninsula. The fourth major species that we've been looking at controlling is the cats. And unfortunately, control of feral cats is an incredible challenge. They've got a great breeding capacity. They don't need to drink water. They are quite adaptable with the prey they select. So they're a difficult nut to crack in a sense as far as eradication goes. And they've proved a big challenge. As have rabbits. The rabbit population here tends to fluctuate with season. We have periodic outbreaks of natural diseases such as myxomatosis, which depletes the population, but rabbits have an incredible breeding capacity, and even when the numbers are suppressed, once we get some reasonable rainfall, they bounce back, and they're also an issue.
Brett Fitzgerald. And apart from just eradicating the feral animals to let the plants and native species recover, Project Eden also has a captive breeding program to help kickstart the process. Colleen Sims.
Let me show you here one of the animals that we've been breeding. This is a bilby, or more correctly, it's called a greater bilby. And these guys used to be very common across Australia, around about 70% of the country. They are a marsupial and a burrowing marsupial. So one of the unusual things about many of the burrowing marsupials, they have a pouch that points backwards, so they don't fill them up with sand when they dig.
That could be a disadvantage, couldn't it? It's about the size of a rabbit, isn't it? This one.
That's
a small
right.
rabbit.
Yep. And the very long ears, one of the common names was the rabbit-eared bandicoot. The bilby is one of the bandicoot family. They're actually omnivores rather than a herbivore like a rabbit. So they'll eat anything from seeds, root tubers, insects. They also have been known to eat mice and small geckos and things too, so they'll pretty much go anything that gives them a good feed. They have some fairly sharp teeth, obviously, considering the array of food they eat. The other thing that's a dead giveaway for their behaviour, I guess, is if you look at their forearms, and this little girl is a little bit fidgety today, they've got very strong short forearms and very long claws for digging on the front feet. They can go along at a fairly good clip. I guess it's fairly similar to a rabbit gait, in fact, a sort of a half-hopping gait to start with, and once it gets fast, they will actually really get running. They live in burrows during the day, anything up to about 2 or 3 metres deep, so they can move a lot of sand, move it very fast. They actually were a fairly common food source for the Aboriginal people, and just still are in some of the remote desert regions, but it takes a lot of effort for them to actually dig a bilby out of its burrow.
So given they can hide underground, why are they particularly vulnerable to things like cats and foxes then?
Well, the reality is they probably are one of the less vulnerable. The fact that they actually do still exist and persist in Central Australia at this stage means they're doing a lot better than many of the other species we previously had here. That doesn't mean they're immune, and there's certainly ongoing concerns that they may still be slowly shrinking in numbers. Because they're nocturnal, because they are omnivores and move about the landscape depending on food sources, it's quite difficult to monitor them. Often you can return to an area where there was quite a thriving bilby colony, and several years later they aren't there anymore, and it does create problems to work out whether that population has actually gone extinct or whether it has moved somewhere. But there's certainly ongoing concerns that even though they were persisting in the desert areas, that population and the range may still be shrinking.
So when you want to breed an animal like this in captivity, what does that actually involve?
Well, obviously it initially involves getting the original animals from the wild and setting up a program. We have a fairly intensive management program here to try and manage the distribution of the genetics through the breeding population. These guys are actually comparatively easy to breed. They've actually been partially adopted in Australia as a replacement for the Easter Bunny. Obviously, the similarity in appearance makes them quite convenient for that, but also because they are actually quite a rapid breeder, so the fertility aspect is actually carried on. So we have an Easter bilby these days in Australia, and we'll usually get anything up to 3 or 4 litters out of these guys in a season, in a year. So they'll produce usually a litter of 2, but anything from 1 to 3. And we will usually, based on some advice from the National Stud Book, that gives us an idea of the relationship of various bilbies we have in our colony. We'll pair up a male and a female, and they may stay paired for most of their time here. Once we've had 3 or 4 litters, we might decide we actually want to move pairs about and remanage the pairings and the genetic lines from that.
So when a baby pops out, it first of all goes into this backwards-facing pouch. Mm-hmm. How long does it spend in there?
The bilbies, as I mentioned, as a bandicooter, actually have a really rapid reproductive rate. Their gestation is only about 10 days. So as with most marsupials, the fetus comes out very small and very underdeveloped, and they then spend around about anything from 65 to about 75 days in the pouch.
And are they sociable? Will they hang around with a family group, or do they go off on their own and act independently as soon as they get out the pouch?
They'll usually spread out and disappear. In fact, some may think this is a great idea we should do with our kids, but the bilbies, the females, actually will leave the burrow, the home burrow, to the kids. So she's the one who basically leaves them after around about 2 weeks after they come out of the pouch.
Colleen Sims, who's a vet and project officer with Project Eden. But apart from the important task of increasing the numbers of endangered species, there have also been some other surprising discoveries. Brett Fitzgerald again.
It's interesting to actually watch in the reintroductions. It's so much more than just putting back the small furry animals. When you actually look inside the breeding pens of the bilbies, and when you look at areas where they've been reintroduced, these actual deeper diggings that they do, you can actually see the way that functions as part of the ecosystem. A lot of the seed that's distributed in Australia is airborne and wind-driven, and you'll actually see in these deeper holes that bilbies dig, the actual seed falling to the bottom of the hole, then having some dirt blow over the top of them. And so as far as driving the ecosystem, as far as plants germinating and plants getting a chance to survive, you really see the function the animals played as much as just their presence in general. Water penetration, when you look inside a bilby pen or around a bilby release area, you may have these shallower rabbit diggings, but the bilbies really turn the ground over. And when you think when we have a rainfall event after that, the capacity for rainfall penetration, water to actually soak into the soil rather than run off and disappear, is that much increased by the presence of these animals. So that's been a really interesting part of the project, is not just to see the animals back in the natural environment, but to actually see the ecosystem function they played.
Do you think it's been successful, though?
I think we've had some real successes. Some of the species, such as mallyfowl, from a process of going collecting eggs to actually hatching those eggs to releasing those birds and then actually going out and finding active breeding mounds on the Perrin Peninsula, some of those species, bilbies included, we've seen a real success, and it's essentially made Perrin a site where we can potentially take those animals bred here to other locations and really use this as a launching pad. It's been challenging, and feral cat control is a challenge, but as well as the effect of control here, the other things we've learned is better techniques. So it's a learn-as-you-go process with some of the species and some of the feral control. The techniques they've developed here and the things they've learned about cat behaviour have been able to be applied, you know, not just in Australia but in other parts around the world. So, yeah, I think we've had some real success with the species reintroduced here, and we've learned things that have been able to be applied in other places.
Brett Fitzgerald from Project Eden in Shark Bay, Western Australia.